And I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Welcome to Amplified Houston on 90.1 KPFT Pacifica Radio in Houston, Texas, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville, and streaming online at kpft.org. Amplified Houston is a collaboration of five nonprofit organizations: Baker Ripley, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Houston, Children at Risk, the Women's Home, the Houston Food Bank, and Houston's community radio station, KPFT Pacifica Radio. Listeners, all the programs you hear on KPFT are listener supported. Become a sustaining member today by calling 713-526-5738 and pressing option one. I am your host, Anna Coffey, the CEO of the Women's Home, and this is Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, where we talk to women doing hard things. In today's show, we'll speak with Teresa Allen, Manager of Clinical Services at the Women's Home. Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer Road in Houston, which is owned and operated by the Women's Home. Proceeds from The Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/cottageshop. All right, let's get on with the show. Teresa, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here today.
I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. Teresa, you are one of our shining stars at the Women's Home, and I'm so happy to get a chance to interview you. You have been with the Women's Home now for how many years?
16 years.
16 years. That is a very long time. And you are a clinical therapist, a psychologist by training. Is that correct?
Yes, a licensed a clinical psychologist. So LPC, licensed professional counselor. Supervisor,
yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to get into that in just a minute and explain what that is. But, you know, Teresa, the show, one of the things that I think you and I see eye to eye on is about the incredible strength of our women at the Women's Home. And this show is actually inspired by them, because mm-hmm. we get to see women come through and completely reclaim their lives and have lives that they never thought were possible. You play a really special role in that evolution of a woman. So can you tell us about your role as Manager of Clinical Services at the Women's Home?
Yeah. The Manager of Clinical Services, I get to oversee a talented team of clinicians and interns and our programming. So we have what we call clinical modalities here. They are how we do clinicians. We do individual therapy. We do groups like seeking safety, assertiveness training, just all kinds of skills, skill building, therapeutic groups. We have process groups where they're able to share. So I make sure that all the programming fits with the state requirements and our clients' requirements. Mm-hmm. And also that we have clinicians that see clients. So we make sure this all runs really smooth. And because I have such a talented team, it runs pretty smooth.
It sure does. And I think one of the things that sets the Women's Home apart is that we do have licensed clinical therapists on staff.
Not many places have that.
Yeah. And master's level. I mean, these are people who are very experienced, very skilled. And I think it makes a big difference. Frankly, I think it makes a huge difference. Okay. Tell us how you got started at the Women's Home.
I got started as an intern. I came here in 2009 as a budding intern, just eager to get here. I actually wanted to get here in my junior year and realized it was too soon to apply. So waited, and a lot of my peers at school were coming here, and everyone talked so wonderfully about the Women's Home. I just couldn't wait to get here. And once I got here, it didn't disappoint.
Yeah,
I kind of like, you know, I want to say I got squatter's rights. I found a desk in an office and I stayed until y'all hired me. I actually volunteered for a while until you had a place open to hire me because I knew I didn't want to go anywhere else.
When you say you, it wasn't me, audience. I have not been here as long as Teresa has. She has, she's I think one of our longest tenured staff members. So you came and you just decided this is my spot. I'm not
This is
leaving.
it. This is it.
Well,
This
and
is
thank God you did because you have made such a difference in the lives of so many women over that time. So it's
it.
really
They've
kind of a
made a
full.
difference in my life also.
Oh, yes, I understand exactly what you're talking about. We are profoundly touched by the women that we serve. So it's really a full circle moment for you, right? You started as an intern and now you actually run the intern
Yes, I
program
do.
for us.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I love teaching.
So I was going to ask you about that. So what does it feel like now to see the new interns coming in? Well, first, let's talk about our intern program. Let's just outline for us who comes, how many people do we train, and what is their length of training? What do they get to
We're a pretty sought after
do?
program, I like to say, and we have been. So that's nothing to do with me, but it is a sought after program. I got about 20, 25 applications for four positions this semester. And we go by semesters because they come in at a certain semester. We require a 2-semester internship, which is 32 weeks. 2 semesters. That way they can get the full experience and be here for about 6 months. And we try to get interns from both disciplines, social work and clinical. And we try to train them just to do everything. I mean, we really count on them to do things for us, and they learn. So we usually have 11, 9 to 11. I like 11, but 9 is doable. Interns per semester. And I think they just have a good time.
So let's shift gears and so it's wonderful because a lot of the interns that come through here then become licensed therapists, licensed clinical psychologists. So Houston is actually filled with therapists who did their training at the women's home. So if you
Yes.
think it, we train, anywhere from I guess 20 to 23 or 24
A year.
interns a year. And then they all go on to become professional therapists. And so, there's a lot of people out there in the world that have trained at the women's
They have.
home.
They have. I
Yeah,
run
which
into
is
them all the time.
me too.
And
Me
they call me
too.
from other places, like, hey, remember me? I'm like, okay.
So we're very proud of really helping build a very high quality behavioral health workforce in the city of Houston. So the women, let's talk about our women. Let's shift gears and talk about our women. The women who come to the women's home for treatment are often at the lowest point in their lives. So as a reminder to our listeners, we serve women with co-occurring mental health and substance use disorders, many of whom have experienced homelessness. Tell us what you see, Teresa, from the moment they walk in until the moment that they are graduating from our program. Tell us about that transformation.
It is just incredible. I mean, when they first come to us, it's heads down, shame, barely make any eye contact. And they're beat down when they come here. They've lost everything. A lot of them have lost contact with family. A lot of them have lost their children. A lot of them have lost just everything, their savings, their jobs, their self-esteem, their will, sometimes their will to live. And it's just fabulous to see them come in. They're scared. They look like, oh my, I don't know if I can do this. And as our clients move through treatment, I like to say that you see the miracle happen. And I know that sounds silly, but it's something that changes, that you can see it in their eyes. I think they start to love themselves. I think they start to gain confidence. Well, I know they start to gain confidence, and I know they start to realize their self-worth. And it just that transformation is incredible for someone to say, I deserve to be here. I deserve to be on this planet. I deserve the things that I should have had and didn't. They become empowered. We also see changes in behaviors and appearances. So you see less disruptive behaviors, less unrest, less emotional dysregulation. And then you see them start taking better care of themselves. We get makeup. And of course, they get to wear the fabulous clothes from the cottage shop. So they're always looking good. One of the clients told me one time, we're the best dressed homeless women in Houston. I said, I think so. And that helps, to feel good about your body and feel good about how you look and how you present is very important.
Yes, it
And they
is.
just start to transform. You see the makeup, you see the hair being done. And and we also see a really big uptick of self-advocacy, which I love. I mean, they're not going to take anything from anybody once they come through the women's home. They're going to be really self-advocates. They're going to say, hey, I need this medication. Hey, I don't like this doctor. I want to change doctors. Hey, these are the things that should be happening for me, and they're not. How do I get them to happen in a great assertive way? So
Yeah,
you
and we
see
love
that.
that.
You see that, low self-esteem, that person that won't even make eye contact, come up to you, shake your hand, look in your face, tell you what it's like to be human and what it's like to go through this. And I just think that it's just a miracle. I just, that's the only words I can say to describe it. And it's humbling to see it.
I completely agree. I feel so blessed to be able to watch the miracle every day. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to take a few seconds to talk about how this show is coming to you. KPFT takes no advertising dollars at all, and almost every one of the people who work to bring you the show are volunteers. Please call 713-526-5738 and press option one to become a sustaining member today. We are back interviewing Teresa Allen, manager of clinical services at the Women's Home, and she's sharing with us the incredible transformation that happens to women who come through our program. And it's a miracle to watch them reclaim their lives and become assertive, self-possessed women of power and possibility. Teresa, earlier you mentioned that many of the women have, when they come in, they have very frayed relationships with their families. And that's unfortunately a very common occurrence in families with substance use disorder. Those of you who know what it's like on the inside of those families know that it can be, quite frankly, just a living hell. And so many of the women that we serve have very frayed relationships. What have you seen in terms of people reconnecting with their family or their children? Because a lot of times women lose custody of their children, or the children have to go stay with a relative because of their illness. Talk to us about that process, that side of recovery.
It's happened several times with me, which I'm so glad that it has with my clients that I've worked with, is that, of course, families give up because they have no other choice, but to say, hey, you've got to get some help. We need to step away for a while. And so we work with our clients here to help them to also realize that it's two-sided here, that everyone has gone through some pain and loss through this whole thing. So you can't expect everyone to jump right back on the bandwagon the minute you get into treatment. So we work through that. We get some assertiveness training going, some communication skills, and then when they're ready and they believe their family is ready, they reach out. I've had several people in my office pick up the phone and make that phone call. And, you know, it pulls at my heart because I'm really nervous about it, because I'm thinking, oh man, what if this doesn't work out so well? But we've prepped. So if it doesn't, we have the skills here to work with them. But it does most of the time. And it's so incredible to see that they are able to communicate that, hey, I love you. This has been hard for both of us. And the connection just really spirits the client. Having that, knowing that these people still love them, didn't like the things that were happening, didn't condone the behavior, but took care of still loving them. So I've been present when that's happened. The healing that takes place after it happens is incredible. Years later, I've gotten phone calls to say, my son's talking to me again. We're together again. Or reunification with CPS. A lot of clients have called me and said, guess what? I have both of my children back.
Oh,
And
that's
it's just,
incredible.
I mean, you know, but it took a lot. It took a lot of healing on both sides. Because it's not just, hey, I'm in treatment, let's get together again.
Just that's such a beautiful thing when people can reconnect and start to rebuild those relationships that are so important in our lives. So, Teresa, as a therapist, you are taught to have something called unconditional positive regard for your clients. That's a term of art in your field. Can you help our listeners understand what that means?
Yeah, that's Carl Rogers in a humanistic psychology approach. It's to accept, support, and value someone without judgment, creating a safe space for healing and self-worth. Now, it doesn't mean condoning bad behaviors. It means separating the person from their actions. It grows self-worth and it empowers them to find solutions that are best suited for the person. We use it here. We use trauma-informed, which means not what did you do, but what happened to you. So we try our best to create that safe space for the client to come in and tell us anything, anything, and we don't judge them.
So, what role does that play, the unconditional positive regard? What impact does that have on a client?
It's pivotal. It's pivotal in changing lives because it empowers the person, gives them their dignity back, their self-worth, and increases their self-esteem. It helps with shame. Oh gosh, shame is the biggest thing. I
Say
mean,
more about that, the shame. What
shame.
is that?
People come in with terrible amounts of shame. They're carrying all of this, what they did when they were in addiction, losing their children, losing everything they've ever owned. I mean, it's a shameful experience. It's because shame tells us we are bad, not we did something bad. Guilt is you did something bad. So we try to use shame talk and try to make sure that the client is not sitting in shame, because they're not going to move on. We examine the behavior. We say, okay, look, you didn't do right here, but how can we change this? Not that you're bad because you didn't do right. Not that you should be ashamed that you didn't do right. It's examining the behavior. Our staff is focused on, like I said, not what did you do, but what happened to you? What happened?
And
That's the
that
first
flips
question
the
we ask.
script, doesn't it? It flips the script for how the women think about and talk about what their life has been all about, right?
Right, because there's a story behind that.
And you are in the incredible role of being a receptacle for those stories, and the kind of the The reshaping, that you help them reshape their stories. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, we do, without the shame, without the guilt, and without the judgment.
Yeah.
So just think if
So,
you could go sit across from someone and had no judgment.
yeah, that's pretty incredible. It's
Yeah.
pretty incredible. I don't think many of us have ever experienced that in our lives. And I think that is what is so healing about it when you do encounter someone who has unconditional positive regard. I mean, many of us have never experienced something unconditional like that, right?
Right.
So it's very powerful. So one of the things that everybody in the behavioral health field knows about is the shortage of skilled workers. We are facing a huge shortage of licensed professionals. And so the field has kind of pivoted to include more sort of people without as much education, but with lived experience. And that can be a really great supplement to a therapeutic relationship. In some places, that's the only support that people get is somebody from a peer perspective, and that's a very good way to find the help that you need as well. But the people like you that are licensed professional counselors, they're very few and far between, and we could probably spend a couple of hours talking about all the reasons that that is. Low salaries, the length of time it takes to become one, and all the rest of that stuff. But I want to talk about what you see as a possible solution in terms of like the internship that we offer. Do you feel like there needs to be more internship programs like ours? Do you think that that would help with the shortage that we're seeing?
Yes, I think it would help with the shortage we're seeing. I think it would also help if more places paid for supervision. You know, we pay for supervision, and I think if more people paid for supervision, because that gets expensive. How many people can, pay $200 a week to be supervised? And you have to be supervised until you get your full licensure. I think it's also a burnout factor, right? And it's a calling. You have to really, just like teaching, just like law enforcement, these things are callings because it's certainly a stressful job.
It's so let's talk about the burnout factor. So what do you think is the cause of burnout, and how do you overcome it when you face it?
I think it's a shortage of staff, just like you said. So you get to a place and there's not enough people working, you have a bigger caseload. More pressure. We really, really work on a schedule here where I don't want you to be pressured. You need to spend time with your client. So that's not always done at places. So there's lots of burnout. There's lots of, you need to see 20, 30 clients in X amount of hours. And with what we do, the trauma we hear, that's an incredible ask for someone. It's too
Yeah,
much.
because the stories are very heavy, and you need to kind of be able to have that time to recalibrate and process, and sit with that, and be able to, absorb it, because y'all do absorb some really
Oh, yeah. There's
incredibly
vicarious
difficult,
trauma.
vicarious trauma. Yeah, so it's a real thing. How do you overcome it when it happens?
You take care of yourself. You want life work balance. You make sure you're able to say no when someone asks you to see 20 clients. You're not going to be given the proper care for clients, so say no, and it's okay to say no. I teach my interns that you have to have good boundaries, because if you don't, you won't be in this profession for very long. You have to be able to manage your caseload and make it that it's doable for both you and your client.
So, we're pretty close to the end of our show. I wish we could keep going, Teresa, because I just find you so fascinating, and I just you have so much wisdom to share. But you are also a woman who has done some hard things in your life. What has really gotten you through some of, tell us about a little bit about some of those hard things and what it was that got you through them.
Recently, I lost my husband of 34 years. He had a real lengthy illness, and the women's home stood behind me 100%. They allowed me time off while he was ill and allowed me even more time off after he passed. It's about having purpose because I think that if you have work that you love, you never work a day in your life. And it gives you purpose. My husband was so proud of the work I do. So proud. He used to talk to everyone. Oh, look what my wife does. I'd have to tell him, stop. And that gives me purpose. Being here with the ladies gives me purpose. Finding joy in just the little things like they do gives me purpose.
Well, speaking of finding joy, that's always my last question. Where are you finding joy these
I'm
days?
finding joy here. I'm finding joy in the little things. I'm finding joy in my family and my friends and just, keeping that life work balance so I can help. If I can't take care of myself, I can't take care of anyone else.
Teresa Allen, those are very wise words for us to end on today. Thank you so much for being with us. I'd love to have you back again sometime to go even deeper.
Okay.
But for today, I want to say thank you for being on the show. Very much appreciate you. Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Road, Westheimer Road in Houston. It's owned and operated by the Women's Home, and all the proceeds pay for programs like the one that Teresa just told you about, helping women reclaim their lives. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/cottageshop. Please stay tuned for Gulf Streams with Weston Twardowski for the latest environmental and climate news in the Gulf Coast region and beyond. This is Anna Coffey from Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, over and out.
Hello?
Man, where are you? I thought you were coming.
I can't. I'm in bed with the flu.
The flu? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Grandma's about to crowd surf. Man, I'll call you back.
Don't get stuck at home with the flu. A flu shot is safe, effective, and you can get it at the same time as your COVID-19 vaccine. A flu shot is the best way to prevent the flu and its potentially serious complications. Don't get flu FOMO. Learn more at getmyflushot.org.
Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, this is Jesse Date. KPFT means a lot to me as a musician especially because when I was a younger guy, I lived over in the Montrose, literally like one block over from the station. And I would listen to KPFT nonstop. They would play entire records by Townes Van Zandt. I mean, it was insane. It was such an influential thing on me in terms of the songwriters that KPFT supported. And you would hear everyone. You would hear Willis Allen Ramsey and Billy Joe Shaver and Guy Clark and just all these amazing writers. So I don't think I would have taken writing as seriously if I wouldn't have listened to KPFT. Hey everybody, this is Jesse Dayton, and you, my friends, are listening to KPFT.